Hello, and welcome to the Inside Reviews podcast for June the 10th, 2022. This is episode June the 17th, 2022. This is episode 115. On today's show, we'll be talking about the Chevy Blazer SS full frontal tease and reveal date, the launch of the megawatt charging system by Sharon, and the debut of the Neo ES7. I'm Dominic Yoni, Inside EV's forum moderator and Inside EV's editor. Joining us today is the resplendent Tom Ologny, Inside EV's editor and host of the YouTube channel State of Charge. We also have the mesmerizing Mr. Martin Lee from the EV News Daily podcast, which is available on all the best podcast platforms. And of course, Kyle Connor joins us from the majestic, practically palatial halls of Out of Spec Studios, where he produces boom shakalaka videos for a growing number of YouTube channels. All right, so before we get going, I'd like to ask that you please subscribe to the channel. If you're watching this on YouTube, please hit that thumbs up button and ring that bell icon for notifications so you'll know immediately when a new video is published, like, say, the Kia EV6 review that went live this morning on the Inside EV's YouTube channel. If you're watching this on Twitch, you can also ring that bell icon for notifications. All right, so with that out of the way, today's episode is sponsored by Holley. And Martin, do you have a few words to tell us about this event?
There we go. I'll put it up back on screen. Yeah, we've been talking about this for a few weeks now. The Holley High Voltage Experience. They call it the ultimate adult playground for EV enthusiasts. But the important thing is it's for all kinds, right? We've talked about this before. If you want to go along to Holley High Voltage, it's in the beautiful Sonoma, California region. And there's so much going on as well. Just to remind our viewers, if you haven't booked your tickets yet, you can see some drag racing, some road racing, a bit of autocross. There's a big car show there as well. And they do bring together some of the biggest personalities in EV world as well. So if you follow a few of those key people on social media, those influencers, those content creators, be a ton of those there as well. So whether you want to bring your own EV and push it on the track, or whether you want to just hang out with like-minded people, or whether you are learning, I think this is the biggest kind of group of people who I'm really interested in at the moment, learning about electric vehicles, because they know that these cars and these vehicles are cutting edge, but they want to know more about them. And you can head along to Holley High Voltage Experience. There will be something for you to learn. If you want to register right now, you go to hollyhighvoltage.com. We've got it on screen right now. There you go. Hollyhighvoltage.com, July 9, 10. So we're less than a month away now. You can see the countdown on your screen. 21 days, 19 hours, 26 minutes. Get down to Sonoma Raceway. You can click on the website to grab your tickets. And it is going to be a brilliant couple of days, however long you go for. So there you go. We've talked about that for a couple of weeks now. And just a final reminder to our viewers that we love supporting the event here at Inside EVs, and we can't wait to see you there.
Awesome. All right. So CMO says, good morning, everyone, and especially the runout ranger, Kyle. I'm not sure what that means exactly. I don't know. Kyle, do you have any insight into that?
Renault Ranger.
Run out.
Ranger. No, the run out Ranger because of your Ford F-150.
Oh,
run out.
Run out Ranger. I was like thinking Renault Twizy. You know, I was like, let's go. By the way, speaking of weird cars, just for a half a second, did you all see biggest news of the week that the Citroen Ami has the new off-roady trim going in?
I have that in the show list.
Oh yeah. We'll get to that.
I have that in the list.
That should be the first thing.
This is like, yeah. Why is it not the thumbnail? Why is it not the top story?
I mean, I briefly considered using it as a thumbnail because I had only had the Chevy Blazer and I had to do a lot of like a Photoshop work to even make that halfway work.
Yeah, if you used it as a thumbnail, I don't know if YouTube could handle the amount of views that this podcast would get.
Right. So, okay. If we want to talk about this a little bit, we can. Citroën My Ami Buggy concept has spawned and it's going to be a limited run edition. And Martin was telling us too this week, they're cheapest chips up there, right? I think that's the expression you use.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's a couple of £1,000 down on a personal finance agreement, but then it is 20 quid, which is about $25 at the current exchange rate per month. And that's less than a mobile phone contract. You know, that is right? That's like half the price of my broadband. It's probably a third of the price of my broadband, probably. So when you put it in that context, that's like three coffees a month. And so, you know, hey, why don't you just go past the drive-through a couple of times and have a car instead? Okay, so you might argue it's not a car. No,
that's what I was just going to say.
And it'll do 28 miles an hour. So if you're stuck behind one of these things, you are going to be pretty red-faced with frustration. But hey, who cares if you're driving the thing? And you know, we see a lot of stuff comes across our desk, and you know, it's like, oh, you know, there's a concept or a prototype or, you know, a design exercise. But then it's so cool when you get an email to say, hey, by the way, we're going to put these into production. Now, they're going to make 50 of them, but I imagine that's just for them to say we're going to make 50. They could sell 500 of them. I think they'll do more than 50. This looks, so Martin, they're actually going to make it.
Can I buy one through you? You keep it in Europe for until I'm able to import it to the US?
Yes.
So you
absolutely
would have to live with it for 25 years. We know the people who made the drive train. We can tune it to do like 60 miles an hour. Remember I drove that tuned one?
I want to know, like, what
who would drive in that thing at 60 miles an hour? Right.
So
I'd rather be on a bicycle at 60 miles an hour.
No, this is way cooler. Safer.
What stops me putting this inside a shipping container? Seriously. Like,
well,
why
it's the U.S.
can't I bring one?
I mean, until you try to put it on the road with, you know, you could drive it off-road. You could bring ship it here and drive it off-road on your ranch or
it's
whatever.
It's not a car. Hasn't got a partial safety test.
Oh, that's a good idea. I don't need to register. I don't even register my cars anyway. So let's just take it over here. Let's do it.
Yeah.
So let's do it.
I mean, where are you going to drive it in Loveland? You're in Loveland?
Fort Collins.
Yeah,
it's basically Wyoming up here. We got space. No one cares. They would see this thing and feel sorry for me. They wouldn't,
as long as they have room to go around you. Yeah,
and there's plenty of room to go around this. This is tiny. Look, this costs less than some e-bikes. Like, why wouldn't you? Buy... I said this week. Why wouldn't you buy one?
Like, it's so true. It's like the same top speed as an e-bike.
That's the end of the show then. Thank you for watching.
I have a totally different take. I finally saw one up close when I went to Amsterdam last week, and I sent you guys a picture of me standing in front of it. And I think I was like, why does Kyle have a fascination with this piece of blank?
Wonderful engineering is the term.
It's a golf cart, Kyle. We go to Florida. There's 100 different companies selling little golf carts like that, and they look cooler than that thing. Like, whoa, the hell with that thing.
You can get baby
I'll hummers. Buy a golf cart. I could get a golf cart for much less. That is more functional. Looks better.
Looks like a G-Wagon.
Total, you know? Opposite on this thing. This thing deserves to die a fast death. They're only making 50 of them, Martin, because nobody wants them.
Well, this marks the end of the friendship with Tom Malagni.
we need that graphic, that fight graphic. All right, so it appears like some of us have had a very busy week driving electric cars and making videos. So Kyle, let's start with you. You published a Ford F-150 Lightning highway range test and an efficiency showdown between the Lightning and the Rivian R1T, and of course we want to hear all about that. But first, you made a video wherein you charged 5 different vehicles from the Ford F-150 Lightning for a number of hours. Now, that sounds kind of like a kind of gimmicky, you know, video, whatever. But there's actually some good information there, because I watched it. And but there's some good information in there that you managed to glean from all that. So maybe you can tell us about, like, how you set it up and what you learned.
Yeah, so been driving the F-150 Lightning. Ford loaned it to out of spec, and we've just been doing everything with it, from driver assistance testing to we did a whole bunch of max payload stuff yesterday. We're doing towing this weekend. We actually got our own trailer now, so we have our own standard out of spec trailer that we can compare the same trailer across multiple trucks. After this podcast, we're going to pick it up. Just a note on the F-150 Lightning, stellar vehicle. Just awesome. It does so many things. It is the right truck at the right time, which is what I keep saying. And now, after putting a lot of miles on it and living with it for a week, and we still have it for some time, just thrilled with it. Couldn't be more pleased with how good this truck is. And part of that is the functionality that comes from it, such as Pro Power on board. And Pro Power on board essentially are 3 different inverter banks with inside the truck that can provide a total pretty much almost 10 kilowatt power output when you add everything up. we said, well, they say it does 10 kilowatts, but is that for like 5 minutes, 30 minutes, an hour? Let's try and max it out. And right. So we left it overnight as maxed out as we could get it, given the cars that we had and the adapters we had. I think we were less than 20% off of max. We had, you know, some inverter banks putting out 3.6 kilowatts, which is all they can do. We had others, you know, in the high two ranges. And so it charged all five cars all night without issue. Now, this is not like a story like, hey, look, we're charging cars. That wasn't the point. The point was, right. Can the inverters deliver the power that Ford is saying for a consistent amount of time? The answer is yes. It even has active thermal management for the inverters, because I came back to it in the morning because we left it run all night, and I came back to the office and the fans were ripping on the truck. I'm like, oh no, I left climate control on. Our results are skewed. No, it was cooling the Pro Power system. It was really neat.
That's nice. It's all tied into the main cooling system then.
Everything seems to be. So, you know, we always had issues with Maki's sort of thermal strategy and everything like this. This is definitely one step above what that vehicle is. Now, granted, you can get into thermal throttling it just like any electric yeah. car, but it's no longer an issue like it was in Maki. It's definitely the next gen stuff.
Right. I think I watched a little TFL drag racing video the other day, and I think they had some power limiting, like at the end of a strip after like a few runs or something. But
yeah, that I believe.
But it's very temporary.
It's still conservative compared to some other vehicles. I mean, I can get it to start derating. I put that in my review when I drove it for the first time, but nothing like what the Maki has been doing to us.
So the one that you feel can be derated, does that have the extra cooling loop for the towing package?
Yep.
Okay.
So yeah, ours has everything. It's a Platinum, so it has every available option. So we were able to test everything. Took it camping, tried that fold flat driver's seat. We have so many videos coming on this truck.
Okay.
And I actually camped in the truck in the mountains, and we had three Rivians. I mean, it powered our whole campsite. It lit it up. I mean, we're trying to do everything possible. And we ran it side by side against a Rivian R1T. Someone asked, why didn't we use a Hummer EV? Someone said, why did I choose to not use a Hummer EV? No, we emailed everyone asking for a Hummer EV. We went to the forums. We went to the Facebook groups. We went to GM. We're like, give us a truck. And no one has one here in Colorado that we can find.
Right. So, yeah, you're going to mention that you also conducted an efficiency showdown between the F-150 Lightning and the R1T. So maybe you can tell us a bit about how you conducted that test and how much more efficient the Rivian is. If it is more efficient, I don't know. I didn't watch this video because you have a lot. You have another one I didn't mention. You have one with Jordan, you know, measuring everything.
Sorry. Yeah. No, go ahead.
I was just going to mention that you had another video with Jordan measuring everything that could be measured, I guess. And there's Jordan back there in the F-150 Lightning.
Yep. But, the driver assistance challenge just went up this morning. Jordan's here too to talk F-150.
Hey, Jordan.
I guess we ran F-150 Lightning and Rivian R1T side by side this week. And the Rivian was not that much more efficient than the F-150, considering how much bigger the F-150 is. I was really impressed with that truck's energy usage throughout. It was less efficient than the Rivian, but not by that much. Do you remember the numbers?
1.9 miles per kilowatt hour in the F-150.
But that's according to the screen.
Yeah.
It was like 10% difference, 7 to 10% difference, something like that.
Hmm. Kyle, I wonder if you had a Lariat like I'm getting, if it would be equal, because the Platinum is going to be slightly less efficient.
Right, but so is our Rivian. We both have 22, the same tire size on both trucks. So if you ran the road wheels on the Rivian and the standard wheels on the Lightning, they would both be more efficient.
Yeah, I gotcha.
Interesting.
Yeah, it was as close as we could get it. And so it's actually working out well. And then this weekend, we're doing some towing stuff, obviously, between the trucks. So I'm going to do, just see how they handle in super hot weather and all of that good stuff.
So the side-by-side efficiency thing, what speeds do you go? Because I think aerodynamics really, you know, probably plays a bigger role in this rather than the two motors versus four motor situation.
Yeah, it's all aero, and seemingly that the F-150, considering the extra size, is doing a better job managing the rest of its power than the Rivian is. Just a gut feeling. It's so hard to say, you know, definitively in the real world. But, you know, I explain all the testing procedures. It's super long. It's super nerdy. We did our best to show all of the different ways we could calculate this out, because you can't rely on the in-car, you know, energy consumption, because each vehicle pulls it from something different. So, yeah, I think we did an okay job showing the difference.
Nice. Awesome. So let's see.
So Kyle, you've driven both of them now. We've been talking about which one of the trucks I'm going to keep for like 8 months now. What do you think would be my decision?
You go Rivian. Yeah, you go Rivian. Yeah, it's just, you know, I've had them parked next to each other for a week now. And anytime I need to run cross town, you know, we've been working with the truck. So they're at the end of the driveway. I can just get in and go. I just hop in the Rivian. It's so much smaller, like not even a little bit smaller. So much smaller that you really can zip in and out of traffic. It just is like so much better at getting through a city than the F-150 is. The F-150 has a really slow steering rack. It's quite a big vehicle, of course. And where we live in quite an urban environment, you know, north of town, it's Wyoming, but where we are, it's a city. It's pretty tight. And the Rivian is the perfect daily driver for me, at least. I'm so happy that I have that vehicle. It's so fast. It's so great on a canyon. It's so great off-road. It's just seemingly kind of better in the spider chart compared to the F-150. It can do more of everything, except the F-150 is much better with utility, much more space on the inside, much bigger bed and much bigger front trunk, and honestly, more thoughtful features in the F-150 than the Rivian, which I think interesting, because we always commended Rivian on the flashlight, on the cool ethos of design, on their software. But when you start living with both trucks side by side, you go, oh, the F-150 has zone lighting and I can light up my campground. That's really nice. Oh, I got a 240-volt power outlet. I can charge another vehicle quite quickly, rather than in the Rivian, it's just 110-volt. Oh, there's two power outlets on the inside. It just is like so much better thought out for the user, in my opinion, the Ford.
Well, Ford's had 50 or 60 years of talking to their customers. What do you want in your truck? You know, it's not just they had to reinvent it for electric truck. You know, they've been refining trucks for decades and asking their owners, what do you want? So it is, to me, it's a big mistake that Rivian didn't put a 240-volt outlet in the back of that truck. I mean, that's a big faux pas for me. You know, there's really, I'm at loss to figure out why they didn't, because it wouldn't have been that much more expensive, and it would make so much more utility for the vehicle. Now, I know they're telling you it's not a work truck, you know, and the 240-volt outlet a lot of times is for work equipment, but there's plenty of stuff you could use on it that's, you know, for camping and whatever, that would be 240. It would make it so, the utility so much more. So that's one of the few things that I think Rivian really missed on.
You know what's interesting? Being able to live with both trucks now for, Jordan, I don't know, at least 1,500 miles this week in both of them. Like, we've really been driving them to figure them out. No one looks at the Ford. Not anyone. No one notices it. Unless it's at a charging station. Then people go crazy. It's just not even on their radar that this could be an electric vehicle or anything different. We're just driving through traffic. Meanwhile, like, we could have both trucks in a row. I could drive the F-150. Jordan could be in the Rivian. I'm watching people give him thumbs up. They're like, whoa, Rivian. I drive by. They don't even notice. But when you pull up to a charging station in the F-150 Lightning, good luck leaving, because everyone wants to talk to you.
Nice. Yeah, the good looking trucks, man. So I have a friend here looking to buy like three different electric vehicles. And I told him about the F-150 Lightning. He didn't know about it. And he made some calls. He did some searching and made some calls. And it looked like there were some out there that he could possibly get. But it was another like bait and switch kind of deal.
Yeah, there's just like, it's going to be 6 months to a year before you could walk into a dealer and just pick one up. I'm sure we'll hear stories sprinkled here or there, but you know, unless you want to pay significantly over sticker.
It's significantly over sticker. Yeah. You know, I mean, it's we're not talking 5,000 like you see on EV6s and Ioniq 5s. You know, we're talking nearly doubling the price of the truck.
Well, yep. If
I thought I could find a $40,000 one now, I mean, I really wish I had thought of this before. I don't know why, what I was thinking, but yeah, I'd order, maybe I think I could swing a $40,000 one if I get the tax rebate back after that. Even, because it's just such a great deal.
It would be worth that for the next 10 years. Look at how well trucks right. hold their value. It's never like, it, obviously, if you look at a $40,000 combustion truck, it's already way worse than that electric thing will be for a number of years. So its value will be, it would be the safest new car purchase in the world.
Yeah. So you also did a highway range test, and there was a huge amount of interest in that initial result. That video is doing really well for you. So want to tell us about the conditions that you shot it under or did the test under, and the truck spec, like the wheel size and how it did.
Yeah, Tom and I run every vehicle in a very similar condition where we DC fast charge everything to full. We then run it till they die. We've been saying this forever. Nothing special about the testing procedure. I took it into Nebraska, came back 70 mile an hour loop style constant test. The whole thing is live streamed on Out of Spec Motoring. The whole video is up on Out of Spec Reviews. And actually got it first time ever. Knock on wood, that doesn't happen again, completely ran out of charge. And about, you know, in viewing distance from the charging station. So,
really?
Which, you know, I was pushing it and so totally deserve it. I thought it would make for good content. So I'm kind of happy it happened. I had time, you know, whatever. It's not the end of the world. I was in a safe place. And so I ran it completely out to see what it would do. Funny enough, a viewer of the live stream, because again, I was live streaming this whole thing, lived in the neighborhood, apparently, where I was ran out, came out and his whole family came. His wife steered it and he and I pushed it and his daughter filmed it, although she didn't actually hit record. So we don't have the exact footage. I thought it would have been funny, but we pushed it all the way to the charging station and got it plugged in. And so, for me, everyone's like, wow, you ran out. I don't know. I like a little bit of adventure. And obviously running out of charge does well for views. And, that was good. Good business decision to run out of charge, I guess. We'll do it more.
I mean, it doesn't say that necessarily. It doesn't say like you ran out of charge. You say from full to absolutely dead, but, you know, we don't know that's.
I think it gets shared around. I don't know. Yeah, I try not to clickbait these things.
Right, right. So,
but that's Kyle. If it correct me, that's the first time you went flat and had to push it, other than like 5 feet from the charging station. Remember the one time I was actually with you, we had to push it. We made it to the stall, but we couldn't make it to the cable. We had to push it like 3 feet to plug in.
Was that a mini? Was that a mini?
Yeah.
E?
Yeah. But that was the first time you ran out on the road and had to be pushed out of all the cars you've done.
If it wasn't the F-150 Lightning, if it wasn't live streamed, I probably would have pulled in at the last loop because it felt like it was going to die. And usually, you know, Tom and I have a pretty good idea when we're right about at the end. And I knew I was right about at the end, but I was just keeping the live stream active and going and, you know, just being an idiot. So it was pretty fun. Yeah. And the distance to empty on the display showed zero for about 10 miles. So, I mean, I purposefully went pretty far below.
So you went 10 miles after it indicated zero?
Yeah. And I think no one's alluded to this, but it's not Ford's fault I ran out. They actually built in a ton of buffers to stop me from being me. Yeah. So I was impressed overall, actually. And it was really funny just watching everyone filling up with gas, as we're pushing this F-150 electric. It was not a good message. Those 12 people will not be buying an electric vehicle anytime soon. But for everyone else, I think we got the right messaging across.
Right.
Maybe they didn't know it was electric. Like you said, you can't tell the difference.
Yeah,
maybe they thought you just ran out of gas.
That still happens. Yeah. I mean, less and less. You know, I haven't really seen that many people run out of gas like on the side of the road.
I ran out of gas just a couple weeks ago.
Seriously?
At the gas pump, pulling in, the car died. Yeah.
Oh, geez.
Perfectly timed. It was,
you weren't
it
doing
was
a range test for the gas car, were you?
It was in my, I have a classic Range Rover that I drive every day. And this, it was literally as I bought it, the guy gave it to me with no fuel in the tank and it died pulling into the nearest gas station.
So this,
I ran out of gas a bunch of times. I used to have a van that the gas gauge was broken. So I never knew what I was at. And I would just fill it up every 4 days to be safe. And then on a couple of times I had driven further than I realized those 4 days and just
it happens. So
I smart and put a little gas can in the back, like a gallon of gas.
Yep.
So I could always just get to where I was going, but it happened like 3 or 4 times before I actually got smart enough to put a gas can in.
That was
like in the '80s.
My truck, the fuel gauge hasn't worked on it since I got it in like 2001 or whatever. So I just use a tripometer And I just know, oh, okay, I can go 200 miles or 220 miles. It's below 200 miles now. Actually, I need a catalytic converter. But yeah, I've run out of gas, but it's been a long, long time. Anyway, so this F-150 Lightning range test. So what wheels did you have on it? The 22 inch?
So this is the least efficient F-150 you can buy because it's the big battery, and which helps with range, of course, but it's heavier, so it's less efficient than the standard battery. And it's on the 22s, and it's got the massaging seat. So it's the least efficient F-150 you can purchase. I'm really excited to see what Tom's Lariat does when he gets it, because that's going to be the actual useful test. The number of, the trim level that we have, which is called what again, Jordan?
Platinum,
thank you. I don't know why it's escaped my mind. The platinum trim is, they're like, if you look at the chart of how many they're going to build, not nearly as many as the spec Tom's going to get. So Tom's spec is, he's right in there at the most amount of F-150 Lightnings you're going to get. That's the range test I'm keeping my eye on to see how well it does with wheels that are much better optimized for range.
I can't do it until I get it. Somebody just asked a little while ago, have you gotten it yet? No.
Sure, right?
My delivery window was June 6th to June 12th. Hmm. It's June 17th now. So I looked, checked back online. It said, now your delivery window is June 14th to June 20th. But the 20th is 3 days from now, which is Monday. And I called my dealer last night and he said, my truck's not even on the carrier yet. It's been parked in Ford's parking lot since May 16th.
Let's hope it's not dead. I've heard reports of him at 0% just sitting there.
31 days now, the truck's been complete and parked. And they're just trying to get carriers to get these things delivered. It's probably the fact that there's a shortage of truck drivers and trucks, and they've got, they've got thousands of them just sitting there waiting to be sent out. So yeah, I'm getting a little anxious here, but
let's go pick it up.
Yeah, I was gonna say they should have like a factory pickup program.
I probably would, but I think they might not let you. It might be an issue with the dealers and everything, you know.
Yeah.
I like even if idea, I picked it up and drove it to the dealership and then like did all the everything there, they probably still wouldn't let me.
Right. No.
But you're riffing, you got to go to the factory and pick it up and look at the factory and loved it. Probably, I would imagine, really increase the brand loyalty of customers when they have that kind of experience, I think. And yeah, I can see it was easier when you're a small manufacturer like Rivian to do that kind of thing. But so maybe it's not quite as feasible when you're Ford and have 100,000 people a year buying, or I guess.
It's probably not feasible, and they certainly wouldn't make any kind of special arrangement. People, I think a lot of our followers think sometimes that, we get all kind of special treatment. It depends on the manufacturer, but typically, we don't they don't want to, they treat us like everybody else, which is what they should. And speaking of special treatment, I'm super jealous that Kyle was able to pick his Rivian up at there and check out the factory and everything. But Kyle, I never asked you, I don't know if you want to say it on the air, what did you pay for the R1T? Do you remember what it was?
With taxes and everything, no, but more expensive than I kind of wanted to pay for it.
So you paid the current pricing, or did you pay like the pre-pricing? Or you don't want to say that?
Yeah, let's not get into it.
Okay.
It's something where I think we try not to talk about what we pay for our cars, mostly just because we're trying to have fun with them, so we don't get into it. But I think, no crazy special treatment from everyone thinks we got this like crazy YouTube privilege from Rivian, right? And so at the end of the day, we didn't. I just knew someone who worked there who was able to get us in touch with a guide, not because we make videos, pricing, not because we make videos, anything like that. So yeah, just same with the Model S we're getting, felt very similar. Everything is just kind of done through the process. No one knows who we are, completely removed. And we got just the standard factory pickup experience. That wasn't because we make YouTube videos or anything. That's just anyone can pick their Rivian up at the factory, is my understanding.
And we have an article on this on Inside EVs, Rivian offering earlier delivery via pre-configured options that you can check out from a few days ago.
Yeah.
So you'll lose your pre-order that includes everything you wanted, but you could take delivery in weeks instead of months. So there are ways for the normal consumer to get
everyone I know got their R1T without waiting in a line.
Right. But maybe they didn't get the interiors or the thing, the spec that they wanted necessarily.
Neither did I.
Right.
Yep.
All right. So how many miles did you get out of the Lightning? I don't know if we said that.
I don't know if I remember. Oh, 260. So it was 250 consistent at 70 miles an hour and 260 by the time I ran it out and drove it slow on back roads. So, you know, in that range, I think when Tom does the test, I mean, we'll see, because sometimes our results do come up a little bit different recently, but they should be pretty similar. Most of the time they are. I think you'll be seeing 270 of consistent 70 mile an hour highway driving, which is very close to what the Rivian did with the 20 inch all terrain tires. And that did about 290 on a charge. So they both have very similar battery pack capacities. Ford claims 131 kilowatt hours usable. Obviously, if you drain the battery faster, there's more heat loss, right? So I got about 128 out of it, 127 out of it. And so, yeah, and we got 124, 125 out of the Rivian. So they pretty much have the same battery pack usable capacity. And the Rivian's a little bit smaller, so it should go a little bit farther. And we already ran the test side by side. Yeah, but impressed with that 260 number.
So, Tom, what size tires does your truck come with?
So I have the 20 inch tires with the you really don't even have an option. Lightning was very streamlined, the ordering. The right. Platinums have the 22 inch. The Lariat has the 20 inch, and okay. The difference is 20 miles, right, Kyle? I think it's 320 EPA for the Lariat and 300 on the nose, I think it was, right, for the Platinum. So, you know, according to the EPA testing, is a 20 mile difference for the 22 inch wheels. So I should do close to 20 miles better than what Kyle did when I get mine. And that's, you know, what he was alluding to before, why he was curious to see when I get mine, what it's going to look like.
I still think that the best two truck solution is an R1T and an F-150 Lightning for the electric truck enthusiast. There's actually a ton of people buying both. All Electric Family is a great YouTube content creator that does towing. They will have both. Tom will have both. I know a few other people that will have both as well. And so a lot of people are treating this as not one or the other, but they very much complement each other in their strengths.
All of the above.
And that's my initial thought was one or the other. And as we've been talking about this and I've been, you know, airing out my thoughts on the podcast, I may end up keeping both and selling my Model 3. So I don't know, you know, when we get it, we'll, when I get both of them, we'll see how I feel about that. But I'm certainly getting ready for it.
There's just one last thing I wanted to touch on really quick before we get into the news and things. We also have been driving a Volvo C40 this week, so I just wanted to mention you'll see videos coming on that. Obviously, F-150 is the hot thing, so we've been doing everything. But Jordan, you're doing the range test on that today, right?
Yep.
Okay, so that'll be kind of interesting. So Jordan's going to do C40 range test, charging test, and I'll do all the weird driving stuff. So that's all coming soon.
Right on. And the C40, just to remind people, is like the Volvo XC40, but the coupe version?
The worst one, but it's still a nice car.
the best one. It's still a nice car. So before we go to Tom, I don't know if you want to mention this yet or not. Do you have a car coming today, another car coming?
Yeah, I was going to hold it, I guess, till next week. But, if you follow me on Twitter, you know we have a Model S that I'm taking delivery of after the show.
Not just any Model S either, right? You're not getting the slow Model S.
No, you know, we can't just get the slow Model S. So.
Not that there is such a thing as a slow Model S. But
it just happened where, like, I didn't think we'd get the Rivian so fast, so I ordered the Plaid to hold me over. I thought it was going to be, like, a year I was going to drive this thing, and they both came in within a week of each other. So
that's nuts.
It's a little nuts. But what's actually happening is, I think, on the back end, we'll have a whole video about this. My dad is selling his Ioniq 5. We have too many cars here. I'm going to drive this out to the East Coast, let him have it for a bit because he's ordered a Lucid Air Grand Touring. And then we're going to do all the Model S versus Lucid stuff when his car comes in, and then I'll bring it back out. So even though we're getting it, I think it'll be a little bit of some time. Also, I ordered the Aero wheels because we're going to put the Martian wheels on it, you know, the good big wheels.
So your dad's getting rid of his Ioniq already, Ioniq 5 already?
I think he's making, like, he's just trading it to Carvana, and they're paying him so much money for it. He's like, I'll just rent a car until the Lucid comes in. I'm like, well, I'll just borrow the Model S.
Oh, man. I need to do that same thing. I need to sell my car. And I'm just like, I need to sell it before I actually can find the bolt, I think, to buy. So it's like a, it's like jumping off of a bridge, basically. I have no faith that there's going to be like a cushion underneath to catch me. So it makes it,
well,
makes
especially with jumping. The way the economy is going, I think that perhaps buying a car won't be as hard, but now's the time to sell.
Right, exactly. Yeah, because I don't think the seller's market is going to last that much longer.
No, do it literally now and just hold yourself over for a couple months, because nothing's looking good in our mass economy predictions.
Right.
Yeah, I booked a telephone call in with somebody on Monday to talk about what's coming next for us, because I was like, well, we'll wait a little bit, but that call is booked in for 10 o'clock Monday morning, and whatever we end up with next, I think it'll hopefully come as quick as possible. But yeah, I just, the way, you know, you guys know that we just sold the Renault Zoe for, in the end, all told, what we paid for it, but if you include what I've spent on insurance over the last 3 years as well. So, which I also feel a guilt about, because I don't know why, because I just bought it at the right time. No one was buying EVs 3 years ago in the way they are now. And we sold it at a time when, you know, London has a congestion charge. The area just got wider. People want cheaper EVs. And we broke even on everything we put. I didn't add the charging costs as well, but we owned a car for 3 years, but 20,000 miles on it and break even, which is crazy. I don't know why. I have some weird British guilt about that, but I mean, I'm not gonna discount it just for the sake of feeling good. I mean, that's the market price. In fact, it was reasonably priced as well. It wasn't the most expensive out there, and we were gonna wait a little while. But I think Kyle is exactly right. I think if you look at what's happening in the wider world, it's good to get your kind of ducks in a row right now.
Now's the time.
Saying that,
Simon has a good suggestion here.
Tesla put their prices up today, though, so everything's getting more expensive.
So on this topic, to borrow one of our Teslas, Jordan, because I keep messing up the paperwork to sell our Model 3, I still own it. So Jordan thinks we should keep it.
May as well.
And so if we do keep it, you could just borrow it, Dominic, if you needed to, for a little while.
Just drive it down. We'll come up and get it.
I might take you up on that. I might have to fly out to Colorado and drive it back.
Yeah, you could do that, or we could drive it out or something. Either way, there's a road trip video involved there, which will do well.
Okay. That sounds interesting. So
we could probably, if we decide to keep it, it's a big if. A lot of cars have been coming in recently, so it would be nice to sell it. But if we decide to keep it, then you're more than welcome to borrow it. It just will sit here.
I better get to work on detailing my little Spark EV, make it look as fresh as possible.
But if you sell it to one of these companies, they don't care. They don't even look at the photos. They'll just give you money for it.
Really?
Yeah. They are meant to do an inspection and all that kind of, but they just want stock. They just need. When we got the MG ZS end of last year that my wife drives, and I looked out of the dealer's window, all the cars lined up on the grass in front of the dealership. This is the prime spot. I didn't see many MGs. Because we bought that through the business. So we paid cash for that. And I said, so we'll probably keep, you know, we'll keep the Zoe, and the Zoe sat on the driveway for 6 months, but we never drove it. So we sold it. But we owned that personally. And the dealer was like, what are you doing with your Renault Zoe? Can I buy it off you? And, you know, it wasn't the right thing to do, but, and this is an MG dealer desperate to buy anything really to put on their lot, because they've got to make payroll and they've got, you know, all those things. They've still got to have a business and sell cars. And I was surprised at how little used car stock is out there.
It's crazy.
So we'll wait and see. But I've, as you guys know, I've never got the Tesla thing out of my system. I've never owned a Tesla, so I think that I might
do that.
I need to get out of my system. Do you know what I mean? Like, and the price went up. Price went up again today. The Model Y performance over here is almost £70,000, which, you know, it's 68 now, I think. And a base IX, which is the M, not the M, which is the 40, X-Drive 40. Mm-hmm. That's only just over 70. And now that's can you imagine, like cross-shopping a Model Y? Do I get a parcel shelf? No, sir, you don't. I'm afraid you don't get a parcel shelf. All right, what else could I have? Oh, here's so... range different, performance different, but would you like to try an IX? For $5,000 more. All right, so like Tesla prices are going wild, so maybe I need to get out of my system just once and for all before they end up being $100,000 for Model Y or something.
But the good news is, no matter what, I think if you buy a Tesla, it's a pretty safe purchase. because they do hold their value really well. Right now, the least safe Tesla to buy is a Model S Plaid because they just seem to have them in inventory and you can get them soon. And so I'm just being an idiot and getting it. But if you had, you know, Model X just went up $6,000, like they are going to hold their value into the future really well.
Right, right. So Tesla raised their prices on not everything, but a lot of things. So the base car is still the same price, but like the Model Y long range went up.
Model 3 base went up over here.
Oh, really? I think it stayed the same. It was like 45.
That's almost 50,000 pounds. That's sterling. Like in my head, I think of it as 38 and a half because that number is, or 39 when it drilled in up here. And it was 39,990 for a while or 39,950. And I know it's been creeping up, but I saw the price rises and looked this morning and I'm like, man, how is that almost a 50,000 pound car? Model 3 is a fabulous car, but it is.
Right.
You know, and there's just no supply. And I think Tesla have just started to struggle a little bit with what the others were struggling with. And they were able to supply cars to fleets because, look, it's got to be fleet buyers, hasn't it? It's got to be people buying it through businesses or company cars or something rather than at that price. If you were to, as an individual, cross shopping a Model 3 at 50 grand, standard range. So it surely must be businesses because there's tax incentives over here, quite good ones to drive an electric car. Right. But I think Tesla, by the look of it, just starting to struggle as well with that supply. So. Which is surprising. Berlin's making 1,000 cars a week. So says Elon Musk. So
I'm excited to see the Berlin factory. I don't think we'll be able to go in, but for any of our European audience, both Jordan and I and some of my other colleagues will be in Europe for the entire month of July from the first to the last day. And hopefully we'll see Martin over there and some other people. So if you are in Europe and you have a cool, different, weird electric car that you think we can make a video with, just email me.
I will be in Germany in July at some point. So,
well, we're going to do the Inside EVs podcast from Germany then.
Let's do that.
We should do it while doing Nürburgring laps.
I was with Neo this week, and they said, "Hey, come over to Germany in July and play with battery swapping." I think that maybe that's their German launch. I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't be saying very that out loud. Cool. And they're like, "Do you want a car?" Yeah, I'll come over. And so maybe we could all align. That'd be very, very cool.
Ooh, that sounds like a cool series of videos we could film.
Sorry, Neo, don't hate me. That might not be public.
You need to find yourself a Citroën Mahari electric one.
A Mahari?
Yes.
What? Yes. What is that?
I'm gonna Google
it. Okay. Let's see. I need to do some screen sharing, I guess.
Mahari. Share screen? Oh, that
it's
is
like
cool.
A almost looks like a cactus kind of thing.
Yeah, but it's I never knew about this. But it doesn't have the padded doors.
It doesn't have the cactus doors, no.
But it is cactus has it's like a cactus cross cabriolet. Jordan, you see this thing?
I love that.
That is so cool.
Winter car right there.
Yes. That is all us. That's electric.
Yeah. And it's got some limitations. I can't remember if it's got like a small battery, if it's like a lower speed thing or what the deal is. There's something odd about it it's like open air kind of like beach mobile. If you live like in the south of France, or, you know, this is what you'd have to, or Monaco, drive around Monaco in this, that'd be great.
Wow. I've never heard of this car and it's perfect.
That's a color combo though. That yes. Blue and the interior, that's quite
the
special.
Only color combo.
That reminds me of my PS 500 1957 edition. Same kind of blue.
Liv just messaged exactly what I was thinking. It's a Barbie car. Reminds me of like the Barbie doll topless Jeep that's thing true. That they used to have.
That's true.
I love good it. Call, oh, that is so cool. So I guess we should email Citroën and ask to review this.
Yeah, I don't know if they still make them or not. You know, I forget even when they came out, but I remember writing about them.
They're not new then?
No, it's been a few years.
Rental Germany. Well, let's see if we can find one for rent.
I think they made a gas version as well, or they made a gas version. I'm not sure if it looks the same as this or what.
They have the old ones for
rent. Yeah, the old ones, yeah. And they were doing some conversions with the old ones too. I wrote about some, but I can't remember. It's been like a number of years, like 5 years or more. I would say it was a small company converting like the old Maharis and then selling them at a price, you know. Amazing. And the old Maharis look pretty cool, but the new ones I think are fine too. You know, they look kind of neat.
We need to find someone who owns one.
Yeah. All right. Hey, Tom. So you did some 70 mile an hour range tests recently as well. And the video of the BMW i4 M50 test is now up and on the Inside AV's YouTube channel. Of course, the M50 is the spicy all-wheel drive version of the BMW i4, and yours had the largest, most aggressive tires and wheels that BMW offers. So how did it go?
Yeah, so the i4 is available in a rear-wheel drive version and an all-wheel drive version. I had the all-wheel drive i4 M50 with the 20-inch sport wheels, which are the most aggressive. And the good thing about it is BMW actually did EPA range testing for each individual wheel tire combo, which not always is the case with all manufacturers. Yeah. So the i4 M50 with the 19-inch wheels has an EPA range rating of 270 miles. And if you put on the 20-inch wheels with these giant, I think they're like 285 30s, 20 Pirelli P0s, huge, wide, sticky tires, it shaves 43 miles off the EPA range rating. It drops from 270 to 227 miles EPA range rating. Coming in thinking, you know, looking for around the 220, because I figured we'd do a little bit worse than EPA, because that's the combined EPA. EPA stopped sharing the split between city, highway, and combined. Really frustrating for us because we love to look at the highway range rating. And they stopped publishing that on the EVs. So 227 combined EPA range rating. And I ended up with 239 miles. Crushed the combined EPA range rating, which very rarely happens. Now, we've talked about it here a lot that the Taycan does that all the time. But that's one of the few EVs that in any trim beats its combined EPA range rating. But the i4 M50 did 239 miles. Great result. The consumption rating isn't fantastic. It was 2.95, just about 3 miles per kilowatt hour, which is basically the same as a Porsche Taycan Cross Turismo. And okay, you would expect a low slung sedan like the i4 to do a little bit better than the Cross Turismo. But it comes in at that, and that could be, you know, I love the i4, and Kyle and I've talked about it. We both shared our love for it. We think it drives fantastically. We think BMW nailed it. And one of the things we've been critical in the past about was, well, it's not a dedicated platform. They use the CLAR cluster platform that they share with their ICE and plug-in hybrids. So maybe that compromises the driving experience. After driving it, Kyle and I think we're on the same page saying we don't think it compromises the driving experience. The thing drives as well as we would expect for a dedicated bespoke chassis. But maybe
better than their combustion stuff.
Yeah. Maybe where it takes that hit for not being a dedicated platform is in efficiency. Maybe it's heavier than it needs to be because the chassis is designed to accommodate different drivetrains. I don't know. I'm just spitballing here because, you know, 2.9 isn't great for that heavy shape of a car, in my opinion. Yeah. And maybe it's heavier partially because it's not a dedicated platform. I don't know, not an engineer. I don't know if there's, you know, a few hundred pounds to save if it had like a skateboard platform. But I mean, I'm nitpicking here. I'm trying to come up with a criticism on, you know, why, because I think it outperformed its EPA range rating. It drives wonderfully. And you know, 239, 240 miles at 70 miles an hour for the highest performance version with these giant wide sticky tires to me is fantastic. So I immediately put in a request for BMW for their i4 eDrive 40 with the 18-inch wheels, the aero wheels, the wheels that are optimized. That version is EPA range rated at 301 miles per charge. Nice. So the funny thing is they had none of them available in the entire press fleet. And I went back with a few emails back and forth, and basically it was almost like, look, I don't think we can give you one of these because we don't, this in that trim, we're not giving it to the media. And then I explained why. I said, look, I just did a range test with this. It outperformed EPA. It's going to look really good for you guys when I post this video. I want their best version now because this was your worst version. And then that response was, oh, I understand. Okay, we'll get to work on it. So hopefully BMW will be able to get me one of those and we can compare on the same platform, the same, you know, test track, basically the same temperature and everything. And we'll see how much better that version does. Also, I think it's going to do 300 miles.
Shame to manufacturers who only give us top spec stuff. Let us have all the different versions. Ford even has base standard range F-150 Lightnings in their fleet.
Oh, yeah?
Yep. That's and then sweet. It's like Hyundai doesn't have a rear-wheel drive Ioniq 5 they can locate anywhere in the country. It's just like, come on, these are cars you're selling to people. It's our job to review them.
Yeah. I asked both Hyundai and Kia if I can get the rear-wheel drive version to eat to range test that because we've done the 70-mile-an-hour range test now on the EV, the EV6 and the Ioniq 5. I haven't published EV6 yet. I just did it a couple days ago. I haven't even begun editing that video. But what I have done is the BMW iX range test, which that's going to come probably next week. The i4. Yeah, no, it might come this weekend. I think I'm done editing that. So look at Inside EVs this Sunday. I think we're going to have that up on the Inside EVs YouTube channel this Sunday if I could finish, put the finishing touches on it and push that out. And, you know, I was also impressed with that. We're not going to tell you what the results is, but I was also very impressed with how the iX did. Went way further than the i4.
From EV reviewers like you and me, Tom, to people who don't really care so much about electric cars in our space, the iX from everyone has received glowing reviews. That just seems like the SUV of choice right now.
The iX.
Yep. I agree with you. Yeah. We've talked about it here a lot. I've been called, you know, a BMW fanboy because I've said the iX and the i4 are great cars. And if you're thinking about getting a Model 3 or a Model Y or a Model X, you need to cross shop. I'm not telling you which one to buy, but you should at least look at them if you are considering those Teslas, because for the first time, there are real solid head-to-head competitors in those vehicles.
I just want to mention that I was Team iX before even people had driven it, just looking at it. You know,
so you're a trendsetter.
I am.
Yeah.
I am. I'm an influencer, maybe.
There you go. Yeah, well, you influence us. I
can't even imagine. Actually, no, I just think it's got a striking presence and a premium presence. So a lot of people think it looks terrible. And I think that's a plus for it, actually. It makes it more.
Come on.
You know, it's people will notice and people will notice you in it. And then now we know that once you're in it, you'll enjoy driving it. The experience is wonderful. And we'll find out on Sunday, hopefully, what kind of range you can get at 70 miles an hour.
And what wheels did you have, Tom?
On the iX?
Yeah.
I have to I think it was the I can't tell from the picture. I think it was the wheels in the rightmost configuration. So,
isn't it still true that the biggest wheels get more range than the one step down?
So, no, that's not true. So there's three size wheels. Are they 20, 21s and 22s?
Yeah.
So, now I'm remembering because I've done so many range tests and so many different vehicles that I'm confusing the wheels. So I actually had the best wheel combo. I had the 20s.
Nice.
And that's EPA range rated at 324 miles. But then there's 21 inch and 22 inch. So you would assume that, you know, the 20s have the best range rating. The 21 should be a little worse and the 22 should be even in more. Worse, right. More worse. Worser. And, but it's not the case. The 20s are rated at 324. The 21s are rated at 305.
Right.
And the 22s are rated at 315. Right. So the 21s are the worst. And that's the size in the middle, which is kind of weird.
Which is the weirdest thing I've ever seen before.
Yeah, I can only think that perhaps the 22s are just more aerodynamically designed,
or like someone didn't test it properly.
Well, you know, I mean that would be I mean, I guess it can happen, but that
would be, it can happen.
Yeah, I know it can happen, but I mean, I'm going to go with the 21s are heavier and have worse aero.
Okay.
Hey, one of our viewers, Craig Matsuda, has an IX and loves it. Awesome.
Yeah.
All right. So
yeah, the biggest knock is the design, in my opinion. That to me is the exterior design. Interiors. Rocks. Interior is awesome to me. Like everybody, all my friends, because you know, my friend, whenever I get these loans, my friends want to take go for a ride and everything. Everybody loves the vehicle, and they walk around to the front and they go, "Ooh, you know, like you know, I don't know if I could live with that." And they point to the front. So, and but then there's people that say I love it. So you know, it's there's no in between with the BMW's new grills on all their vehicles. You love them or you hate them. I haven't met anybody that's, yeah, I'm undecided if I like the front. You know, they're either like, that's a buck tooth beaver. That's disgusting. Or like, you know, oh yeah, I kind of like it. I like this new interpretation of the kidney grill. So, you know, there's no in between. It's kind of like the i3. People loved it or hated it. All right. But that was the whole car, not just the front end.
So the, let's see. Where are we at now? Oh, yes. Okay, so let's start with some news. So the coolest story, I think, this week, let's start with that. The Megawatt Charging System, or MCS for short, has been launched. So at the huge EVS 35 conference in Oslo, Sharon charged up an electric Scania truck. That's a big transport truck, a day cab, I believe, cab over.
Yep.
And They charge this truck at a rate of over 1,000 kilowatts using an Alpitronic charger fitted with a new connector that they say is capable of handling as much as 3.75 megawatts. So that'd be like 3,000 amps at 1,250 volts. So I should mention that this isn't the final spec. That will only be officially published in 2024. So it's a process. The MCS has already been under development for about 4 years. Sharon initiated the task force for heavy-duty charging for commercial vehicles at the first Sharon North America conference in 2018. So it says that it is based on a globally aligned requirements and a technical specifications to develop the requirements for a worldwide standard. So the hope is that this standard will be adopted across countries and industries. So one megawatt charging standard to rule them all. So Tom, you're familiar with Sharon, and I believe you've been to one of their conferences even. What are the chances that we can actually have a single standard for this very important connector?
Oh, I think really good. Mm-hmm. You know, and if well maybe not. Now they think about Tesla had their megawatt charger and they have their own connector for that. They're not using the Tesla connector. They had to develop a new connector. So let me walk that back a little bit. You know, I know Tesla is a member of the Charon Association.
Right. They're members. So, yeah.
Yeah, they're members. And I saw pictures of the Tesla megawatt chargers a while ago. They didn't have this connector on it. So hopefully, since they're a member, they know this is involved. It would benefit the Tesla Semi and future Tesla, you know, big vehicles that are going to use this to work with Charon and have the single standard. You know, I know I saw a lot of people when this was posted on Twitter or whatever saying, oh, great, just what we need, another standard. This is fine that this is different than the plugs we're going to be using for passenger vehicles. You know, it has to be something bigger and heavier. There's right. No need for passenger vehicles to have something as robust as this, because they'll never need to take in the kind of power that buses and big rigs will have to take in. So, you know, don't worry about that. If you were one of the people that tweeted like, oh, great, they're just complicating things even more. But hopefully Tesla is on board with this, because that would be the only thing that would complicate the question you asked me, Dom, and said, you know, a standard. I think this is going to be the standard in North America and Europe. You know, the problem we had earlier with, say, CCS, why there was a discussion on standard was, you know, Tesla and Nissan came out with EVs before there was a standard. There really isn't a big industry yet with buses and trucks. There's some of them out there, but it's not like you know, there's just thousands of them on the roads in North America and Europe. I know the buses are starting to build up in numbers, but I would assume that they would be able to be retrofitted and we could just have one, you know, standard connector like this to use for everyone.
Yeah, and a lot of buses too have a roof charging system as well.
They'll probably be that also, you know, they'll also be that the overhead that contacts in addition to a plug. I think they'll be charged both ways.
Well, I'd forgotten about the Tesla mega charging. I forgot we'd seen that at all, but we haven't seen the connector part of that, have we? We just see like them setting up a station somewhere.
I know I saw close up pictures of it. It didn't look like a triangle like this.
Okay.
I believe I do. If my memory serves me, it was like 5 months ago that we saw pictures of a Tesla megawatt charger, and it had a different connector than the current Tesla connector, obviously. But I don't think it was a triangular connector like this.
I wonder if that's just for development or testing or the first, because I know those first few trucks are going out to Frito-Lay, aren't they? And you know whether they'll move to something like this. It'd be nice if this was the worldwide plug for anything powerful. So if you're plugging in your boat or your commercial vehicle or your airplane, you know, anything like that, that if they can move to this. And, you know, in the grand scheme of things, because everyone will electrify, Tesla is going to be a much smaller part of the future as a market share. But they have a very loud voice in terms of what people pay attention to. So I think from that side, it would be very nice if Tesla fell in line, if that's the right way to put it. But they did. So years ago, Charin put out the kind of the, almost like a tender. To say, right, who's got some ideas for what you should come up with? And I think there was three or four or five companies submitted what they think this megawatt charging system should be. And what I don't know, and I didn't read this week, and I can't find out, is this the spec that Tesla put forward, you know, or is it the one that Scania put forward or something? Or is this a combination of all of them? Because, you know, I would hate for anyone who kind of lost out on that bid to be like, well, we're doing our own thing anyway. Now, look, when the first Teslas came out, you know, they had to create their own solution, which is still wonderful and elegant and lightweight and fast. But going forward, you know, commercially, there should be one standard of charging because it's just going to drive down prices quicker. And that has happened over the years with chips and with cell chips. But, you know, you haven't got to go back very many years, and Apple and Samsung and mobile phone makers were making huge multiples of the hardware because, well, that had the wireless chip that worked with the UK network, and that had the wireless chip that worked with the US networks, and even within the US, as you know, I don't know if that's still the case or not, and now those have all come together on one chip, and, you know, you can pretty much go anywhere and your phone will work. So let's not go down that road with electric vehicles that we then have to try and fix at some point. If we get it right from the start with commercial vehicles, with boats, with planes, it'll happen quicker.
Right. Because that's good. It's just something to slow down the infrastructure, you know, build up as well, because we're going to need like a lot of mega chargers, to, you know, in this country, because we have such a huge highway system and trucking is just such, you know, more than rail even is how we move stuff around. And so,
I mean, if you're a trucking company and you're going to buy an electric truck and Tesla had their own connector and you knew that you could only send the truck on routes where Tesla installed their megawatt chargers, you can't use the ones that are being installed by, say, you know, companies like Electrify America and whomever's going to pick up the infrastructure on the commercial truck. I'm sure lots of it's going to be involved in the infrastructure bill. I think that would be a negative. So I think it benefits everybody, as you know, Martin talked about, if we can just come up with one standard for this.
Yeah, I thought, like you've told us before, that Tesla is part of the Charin organization, their members. So you'd think, and they all talk to each other. They get, you know, there's very like informal meetings. All the engineers that kind of get together and talk to each other. So it's kind of surprising that they wouldn't, because I can't think of a good business case to have a separate connector.
You know, it's really. Over 250, well over 250 members of that. And that's the car maker, everyone from, you know, Tesla to Arrival, the new startups to established car makers and tier one, two suppliers, etc. So it's a big set of voices to bring together. You just hope they can all work together.
True.
As you guys, I meant, you know, I hosted an EV conference or mobility conference this week on Wednesday, Thursday, and on Wednesday morning, I hosted the keynote with Chris Urmson. Now, Chris is the co-founder of Aurora self-driving technology. He was formerly head of Google's self-driving, and so as part of the background of the interview I was doing on the stage for the delegates, getting him to set the stage literally of, you know, why are you rolling out your technology? You know, not doing it the Tesla way, which you get like thousands and thousands of cars on the road and then say, well, we've got all this mileage. And Aurora is probably a name that many people wouldn't know. Chris is a Canadian who is brutally smart and one of these people with about three brains going at once, which makes me feel very intimidated. But they are initially focused on trucking, on US highways and trucking. So it's control the variables, but in terms of setting the table about why their business is focusing there to begin with, he went through like the issues facing trucking in the US in terms of the demographic of the drivers, the amount of people facing retirement in the next, you know, coming 5 to 10 years. And there is a crisis in that industry, which I don't seem to read about as much in Europe, but I know that a lot of goods are shipped by truck in the US. And we are either going to need a lot of electric trucks and young guys and girls getting into the industry to drive them, or trucks that drive themselves, because it's a crisis that's coming over the horizon.
And we feel it too. I mean, even just an example of Tom's F-150 could be very much related to a trucking shortage. We have a shortage all across the U.S. of people willing to work. Restaurants have to close different hours. Factories have to run less shifts. And it's very awkward. It's very common to go to a restaurant and say, sorry, we're closed on Tuesday, or we have to close at 6 p.m. because we can't get staffing for later. Or Starbucks, drive-through only, because we don't have staffing to handle the in-store situation. It's very wild what's going on.
Yeah, it's kind of bizarre. We're at kind of like full employment, it seems like, or very close to it. So there's like, you know, it's a strong job, pretty strong job market, really. And people aren't settling for like less. People are like, you know, oh, you're not going to work for $10 an hour. I can work for $18 an hour over here.
Or they're becoming TikTokers.
Right. The TikTok revolution.
Yeah. I think that's a lot of it, is people have figured out how to, like us, make YouTube videos and do other forms of social media. Maybe we're just in a little bubble, but I meet a lot of people that make their living online from sharing whatever they're passionate about.
Yeah. I mean, it's a great way to make a living. I can't argue with that. Yeah. So
beats running a restaurant, guys.
Yeah. That's some work there. That's a heavy duty commitment and hard work. All right. So General Motors CEO Mary Barra tweeted out a teaser image the other day showing the front three quarters view of the 2023 Chevy Blazer SS. Now, this is an important vehicle for Chevrolet. Well, you know, every vehicle is an important vehicle for Chevrolet right now, but the Blazer is an interesting case. So Chevrolet has an internal combustion Blazer the past few years. It sold like 94,000 of them. Back in 2020, and those numbers fell to 70,000 last year. And this year isn't looking great. I'm not sure if that's because of demand or just because of, you know, part supply, but they're already refreshed it. So it's got a refresh for the 2023 model year. That's different from the electric version. So at the same time, as they're making and selling this gasoline version, they're going to also offer an electric version, the Blazer SS. They don't even call it EV yet. I don't know if they will or not, but so far it's like Blazer SS, which is on the Ultium platform and probably shares like next to no parts with the regular Blazer. It does have a few similarities in the bodywork. But as we can see from this teaser that's up on the screen, if you're watching this on YouTube or Twitch or Facebook, there are some big differences. So the SS has a much less grille area, of course, and it also gets a light bar that spans the distance between the headlights. And the headlights are different as well. They're somewhat reminiscent of the Thor's hammer headlights found on the Volvo. Of course, the other big feature is the charging port and the area around it. Now, Chevy has shown us the charging port in action before, but this picture, I know it makes the area there looks like there's a big scallop out of the bodywork. Like it looks super deep to my eye. I'm not sure if I'm suffering from some sort of like optical illusion. Kyle, can you tell us what's going on with that big gouge out of the side of the car?
like think you just described it. I'm kind of curious why they would do that from a rock chip standpoint. That just looks like it's going to get pelted. Is this how similar to this is the lyric underneath? Do we know the parts shared?
It's probably similar. Like the batteries are probably going to be the same because it's got the same battery pack and it'd be integrated into the body the same way. It's got the same motors and inverters, I think, as the lyric. It's a slightly different size overall.
This looks good. It's as expected. And just this very weird design going on there for that charge port situation. Jordan's our design guy. What do you think about that? Have you seen that?
That's one of the better looking Chevys I've seen.
Yeah, but have you seen this little detail, this scallop thing?
That's weird.
Oh, okay.
Hey, Martin, can you show us can you play us that little clip of the charge port going? Because you can kind of see it.
It's in the article.
I don't know if it's in this article. There's a link in the show notes to it,
though. Okay, yeah, sorry. Yeah, yeah.
I was trying to be all professional with my show notes. But so you can see in this little animation of the port charge port door opening and closing, you can see like the little carve out there in the side, but it doesn't look nearly as dramatic as in this picture. So I'm wondering if it's like an optical illusion with this photograph or something, because that looks like a really like a big, deep, sharp crease there, like into the door even.
I think the charge port's open, Dom, and that's why what you're seeing is inside.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the only thing I can come up with that picture, because there can't be any big thing like that. Like, imagine if a door slid and closed, and then it would be flush.
But where's the space for the port?
I don't know. I know. That's what I'm trying to figure out. But if you look at it in that context, it half makes sense, even though it makes the door look super thick. But imagine if that was just open and that panel is going to slide. Maybe it slides into the front.
Yeah.
I know it doesn't appear to be wide enough to do that, but I think that's the only excuse for this.
Well, okay, we can see it there now.
Definitely doesn't look bad there. See that looks normal.
Yeah, right. Yeah. It looks like it's kind of feathered out. And
I would say we must be looking at some sort of illusion.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I was thinking, because it's weird that they would share this image then of the first one, because
there it is.
Yeah.
It's on a slight angle, and the picture we have makes it look like it's more sharp.
Right.
Yeah, but it is still going to be attracting dirt and stuff. It does.
Yeah, but not
scoop
nearly
out
as bad as this like 90 degree face.
Yeah,
oh, that's pretty wild. I wonder why they would release a photo like that. Maybe just to mess with all of us.
Maybe they're just so used to looking at it that they never noticed it. You know, you look at
that could
that's
be
a hell of a charge flap as well. I mean, that's a big chunk of body work.
That's on the lyric too. Yeah, that's the one thing that worries me about this car. But we'll see. I guess we'll get to try it out in the lyric very, very soon.
I hope it's heated, because you know in the winter when that ices over, that whole panel ices over, I don't know if it's going to be strong enough to bust through the ice when that whole front quarter panel has an eighth of an inch of solid ice on it.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, at least we have a good idea now what the Blazer looks like, and Jordan says, I think it looks pretty good. I think I don't know if. What kind of volumes they'll sell? I mean, that's going to be the real test, right? Because I don't know if they haven't had a high volume vehicle yet. But I get, and the Equinox will be the first one.
That's going to be the high volume one, the Equinox.
Right. Such a great price point.
I'm an Equinox enthusiast for those who are just tuning into the show.
Yeah, that's going to be the volume. That's going to be the play. I might have to get one of those.
I can't tell if you're joking.
He's serious. He
I'm
is
dead
an
serious.
Enthusiast.
Yeah.
Okay.
I had a 2011, loved it. It was one of the best all-around vehicles that we've had here for my wife and I. We absolutely, it was the perfect size for us. It did everything we needed it to do, and it was super reliable. Like, everything was laid out just where I wanted to. I was actually, the longer I owned it, the more I was like, I bought it just because I needed like a crossover type of a vehicle, and I wasn't expecting much. And the longer I owned it, I'm like, I really like this truck. And back then, that was when the Volt was first coming out. And I was saying they put Voltec in the wrong vehicle. It shouldn't have been in a little hatchback like that. They should have put it in this. If they would have made an Equinox with like 25 or 30 miles of range back then, it would have killed.
They should put that in a lot of vehicles, really. But
yeah.
All right. So I guess we'll find out more about that vehicle. I think it's being revealed in July. I think we have the date on that last
18th. I want to say 18th right. of July. So
that's remember, what I'm thinking too. Yeah. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see what that looks like in person. The whole shebang. All right. So we've been talking about NIO and other Chinese automakers recently. So I thought it would be worth mentioning that the NIO ES7 has debuted outside of China. NIO is only available in Norway, but that is changing soon as it expands to a few more European countries, I believe, this year. So the
I can tell you very quickly. Sorry to interrupt. Having also at the same mobility conference that I did this week, also hosted the keynote with the group VP of NIO, Hui Zhang is his name, and he confirmed on stage, and I think this was public anyway, Denmark, Sweden, Netherlands, Germany by the end of the year.
Right.
And when I joked and said, please put the steering wheel on the proper side of the car, but I know you won't, I'm just joking, he said, well, you're not far off. He couldn't say anything, but so they got okay. big 20 something countries very soon. He couldn't say about the UK, but they weren't ready to. So yeah, big expansion.
Nice.
I've never driven a NIO. Have you driven one, Martin? I know Tom has.
No, I haven't driven one. But he was we were talking about battery swapping and whether how it works in Europe compared to China. And this conference, it was kind of an industry thing. So it was a lot of EVs, but mobility, electric tractors, diggers, everything. Yeah, like
I would have gone to that. That sounds great.
Last mile delivery, JCBs, what do you call them? Like loaders and stuff. So I was asking those kind of questions because that was the audience. And look, there was a lot of money being spent by the oil companies and stuff and everyone moving into electrification. So I was asking him stuff like the battery swapping. It's not just convenient for people, but things like decarbonization. If you care about your footprint, you can have a small battery 50 weeks of the year and a big battery for the 2 weeks you do road trips. And he was like, wow, yeah, good question. Like, that's part of their pitch, but I don't think they get asked about that side of it so much. He was like, yeah, good question. That's a really important part of what they're doing as well. So, yeah, the battery swapping is convenient. You do get a full pack. It takes a few minutes, but also it's part of this whole pitch they're making, which is stop focusing on 150 kilowatt hour batteries. If you need a 75 kilowatt hour battery, most of the time, but come and get a big one when you want to go drive a few thousand kilometers.
I think it's such a great idea. I can't wait to see this battery swap thing.
Yeah, battery as a service, I think, will be an easier sell here because I still talk to my US listeners of my podcast and they're like, you don't own all of the battery of your Renault Zoe? I'm like, no, I lease the battery bit and I own the rest of the car. People don't understand it. But I think in Europe, it might be an easier sell.
Right.
I think.
If you're doing battery swapping, yes.
Battery swapping and battery as a service. So you don't own, like, you get 10 grand, 20 grand off the car at the beginning, but then you pay them few euros a month and it's their battery.
Yeah.
So but I think that's an easier sell here. Don't get me wrong, lots of people still don't understand the concept of spending that much money and not owning all of the car.
Right.
So I get it. I understand.
So to get back to the ES7, it's all right. It's going to be on those European country roads. I didn't name the actual roads because I didn't look up the article. It was very late. It sounds like it could possibly come to the US as well then eventually at some point. We don't know. We haven't heard it a whole bunch. I know that there's some NIO activity at their offices. They have offices in the US.
Yeah, in Palo Alto. I've been there and they do all their software development. Nomi stuff is done there. They have NIOs driving around California. Jordan and I met a guy who's an engineer who just like decided he wanted to buy a NIO. You remember this?
Yep.
And then just like brought one in under an engineering loan and he daily drives it in the US. Nothing to do with NIO. He just wanted to drive one.
Okay. Engineering loan, Citronomy. Okay.
Yeah. We were thinking we should register out of spec as a manufacturer so we could bring in all the weird stuff.
That would be amazing.
Yeah. Like, we intend to build a car one day. What? We got a benchmark.
You got to do research.
you got a better chance than half the startups out there. You know, half the SPACs well, that are come and gone. Like,
hey, right, million you know. Miles of range, 35 grand. Put in your $500 deposit today.
Right. So, Neo, we have it on the screen right now. If you're watching us on YouTube or Twitch, Neo refers to this crossover SUV as mid-large, which I guess is larger than mid-size, but smaller than full-size. I don't know. Its wheelbase is 2960. 2,160 millimeters. So that's a smidge less than the Kia EV6. You can tell it's a Neo right away just by looking at it. It's a very clean lines, not many sharp creases. It's a five-seater, and it's also the quickest Neo passenger vehicle to date with a 3.9-second 0 to 62 or 100 kilometers an hour, 162 miles and 0 to 62 miles per hour. Right. The interior is very nice. It's simple, like a Tesla. There aren't a lot of physical buttons, but it's elegant with more... Sorry, reading comments. It's elegant, but it's got some really nice lighting. If we can get to like an interior shot, it's really sweet. Check that out. Like, I don't know. It looks, simple like a Tesla. There's not a lot of buttons, physical buttons, but you know, it's like thoughtfully in place. The lighting's good. There's enough details to keep you, you know, not bored, I guess.
And for those that haven't sat in or driven in a Neo, Neo's a premium brand. The materials they use, the fit and finish, the feel of the vehicle, it's high quality and they're not inexpensive. If you want to compare that to, say, Xpeng comes in at a little bit of a lower price point, and you know that you can feel it in the vehicles. I mean, there's nothing wrong with the Xpeng vehicles, but they're significantly less when you look at cross shopping the same vehicle. But Neo was premium 100% of the way. I drove a couple Neo vehicles when I was over there, did the battery swap and everything, and I felt like it wasn't aimed at, competing with Volkswagen and Chevrolet. You know, it felt like they were competing with Volvo and Lexus and that type of a feel.
Right. I think that the big thing here, though, besides, the interior, the looks and all that, is not only are there three battery options, but one of those is very special. So the base pack is 75 kilowatt hours, good, they say, for 301 miles. The mid-range pack is 100 kilowatt hours, good for an optimistic 385 miles. And finally, the 150 kilowatt hour pack, they claim is good for 528 miles. So that's probably pretty optimistic. I'm not sure if that's a WLTP number or a China number. I'm not really sure. But that big pack, 150 kilowatt hours, that's going to be a solid state pack with cells that are like 50% more energy dense than they have previously. So, Tom, are you aware of any other cars out there or about to be out there that have a solid state battery pack?
No, there's been a lot of talk, but none that are on the verge of being released. I mean, everybody has one. They're all going to be coming out next year, and Henrik Fisker was going to have one out in 2021, if you remember, and Toyota's going to be launching one. So I mean, a lot of talk, but we don't have one actually on the road yet.
So I've been thinking 2025 is like the time frame that, a lot of different battery manufacturers have been mentioning as like that's the date we'll have batteries, basically.
I think it's about right. Solid Power just delivered their cells to BMW and Ford for testing. So they're making them in decent enough numbers now to get them out to those two companies who'll put them into cars. Who'll do a few years of testing. I'd say middle of the decade's optimistic.
Right. So solid. What was the name of that company?
Solid Power.
Solid Power, right?
They've both invested in that company. But everyone's got a decent solid state investment, as Tom said.
Yeah. It's definitely coming. It sounds like 528 miles. That's and a pack is fits in the same space as like a 150 kilowatt hour pack. I don't know. It sounds like the future to me. I don't know. People talk about LFP being the big thing, but I think there's going to be a place for both. Or all the battery technologies for a while until the cost, because imagine solid state's going to be a premium price for a while, but eventually You know, I think it's got fewer actual physical materials involved per kilowatt hour, and so it should be the cheap way to go eventually, I would think. I don't, Tom, sorry.
No, I was going to say, and you know, the vehicle looks really nice, and I mentioned earlier about XPeng as a competitor, because I see them both as, like, you know, really battling it out in for like EV supremacy right now in China. XPeng has a competing vehicle to this coming out basically on the same timeline, maybe a little bit longer. The G9, it's called, it's a full size SUV, and it has an 800 volt battery system, and it's supposed to have really quick DC fast charging, super long range. I'm trying to work out a deal. I may be able to drive that in October. So when I just went to Amsterdam with XPeng a couple of weeks ago, we're talking about laying that out. And there's a good chance they're going to bring one or two of them to the U.S. in very early 2023 to do press drives and stuff. So, you know, we all might get a chance, or Kyle, you know, might be able to join in out in California and actually give one a drive. So there's an event going to be held in Dubai in October that I think I'm going to be going to, and I might be able to get an early look at the G9 XPeng full-size SUV.
So we have a hard stop in about 5 minutes. So I just wanted, before we end, I wanted to mention also that this other bit of the news. So but some bad news, I guess, if you were looking to pick up a sweet Ford Mustang Mach-E, Ford has issued a delivery hold. So we can deal with a safety issue. So you can still buy the car. So it's not a stop sale per se, but you can't actually take delivery. So there you go. So you basically, can't buy the car. Right. You could. You just can't. You have to park it at Ford, at the dealer.
Give someone my money for a car and I sign the paperwork, I own it. I'm going to say, thank you very much for my keys. You can come and find me at my house to fix it. Or it's a software.
Right. So basically, in about half of the Mach-E's that have been built, I believe, they've built like 100,000 around so far, and this affects like 47,000 of them. So its primary high voltage battery contactors can overheat, or could overheat possibly. If that happens, it could cause an open contactor or welding condition, not good, which may lead to the contactors welding shut while the car is in motion. Owners of affected vehicles may be alerted by a powertrain malfunction warning light the next time they drive, and the Mach-E could fail to start. So if that happens, you're going to have some parts replaced. So
it fails to start, but technically it stays on.
Well, the contactor welds itself open, I guess. So, I mean, I guess the circuit stays complete.
I understood it as both, as that it can cause it to either stay open or closed.
Okay.
Huh. So you could just drive forever or not drive at all, one way or the other.
Yeah.
Right.
You could either, and this is also for repeated DC fast charging as well. So that's going to also cause the heat.
Doesn't sound like there's any sort of safety issue involved here.
No, I think the car it'll probably, you know, it would stop charging. It would tell you on the dashboard, pull over, and you know, you're not going to be a runaway, as it were. So,
right.
There was a lot of fever around reporting this story when it first came out. You know, hey, social media.
Right, right.
I think that unfortunately for Ford and for Mach-E owners, supply chains being as they are, this is the last bit of news that anyone needs.
Yeah.
So go ahead, Tom. Sorry.
No, I was going to say, so if you have one of the possibly affected cars, maybe DC fast charge a little bit less if you don't need to, and also don't drive it like Kyle.
No wide
because
open. I drive like such a grandpa. Come on, I really don't, do.
I know you say that repeatedly on the podcast, and then we see videos of you shredding the cars around tracks. So like grandpa. You know, the reality doesn't jive with what's coming out of the mouth, Kyle.
His grandpa's Richard.
But the truth of the matter is, Kyle doesn't drive crazy on the roads. You know, he really just, I've been with him, you know, so, right. You know, when you see him on the videos, he's doing that for content and everything. He's off road. He's in safe environments. I probably drive more recklessly than
that's
Kyle
true.
On public is roads, true. Which probably isn't rumors. Something I should be proud of, but it probably is true.
I literally just cruise at like 5 over everywhere. But here's the thing. Why not just DC fast charge the car, break it, bring it in, get a battery fix?
Well, because if you don't do that, they're going to roll out a put an OTA over upper soft date over the air over the, in the next month, so you won't have to do any of that kind of stuff. The OTA should take care of it.
Okay, so the OTA will preemptively fix the issue, I assume, by having more power limitations to reduce.
Yeah, that would be it.
The charging is going to get worse, and the performance might get worse. That's the only thing I can think to reduce heat.
In the name of safety,
but at least your car won't be bricked. You'll be able to drive it until they come out with a permanent solution. You know, which would probably be some kind of cell module replacements. You know, basically, hopefully they're not going to just nerf the power and say, okay, your car's fixed.
But that's a very real possibility that might be what they do.
We'll have to have
certification and everything, Kyle, because now the vehicles won't have the same amount of power they're certified with. They can't just, I don't think they can do that.
But they already have this limitation. Yeah. They could just increase the limitations.
I suppose you're right. But
I don't know. I'm just guessing. I'm just saying we should benchmark
it. Themselves up for a class action lawsuit that you made the car less than what it was when I purchased it. And hopefully they'll do the right thing for it. And if there is an issue, they'll temporarily, reduce the power to it so you don't brick your car, and then come out with a permanent solution where it's going to be bringing your car in and swapping out modules and so forth. So,
I think we need an answer as to what they change exactly.
Yeah. So hopefully, Mach-E Vlog is following us and commenting on this. They have a Mach-E, obviously. That's their main
subscribe
vehicle.
To their channel. They're great.
Yeah, subscribe to the channel. Liv and Patrick, they were guests with us a couple weeks ago.
I just was camping with them this weekend.
That's right. So from what I've heard, the software fix, they say, Mach-E Vlog is saying the software fix is in place at the factory now. OTA for current Mach-E is coming in a couple weeks, and we have to go. So that brings us to the end of our show. The Rimac Navara becomes road legal as the first unit gets license plates. I needed to mention that for Tom's sake.
Here we go.
Ready for delivery at Dominic's house.
If you have any questions or comments, you can leave them on the Inside AV's forum podcast thread or on our YouTube or Twitch comment sections. If you like the show, please give us a thumbs up if you're watching us on YouTube. And don't forget, you can find and follow our panelists on Twitter. Follow Tom Malogny at Tom Malog. Martin Lee is at EV News Daily. Kyle Connor is at It's Kyle Connor. And I'm at Dominic_Y. Click subscribe and tap that bell icon for notifications. And we'll see you all again next week. Thank you.